Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Governor Jerry Brown cajoled and browbeat lawmakers in the state capitol late into the evening, but managed to get them to pass only 8 of the 20 bills that comprise his $26 billion and change budget deficit fix. Republicans delivered the necessary supermajority for roughly $7 billion in cuts, including deep cuts to welfare, Medi-Cal, and support for the developmentally disabled. But the GOP would not play ball for the governor's push to abolish redevelopment agencies and free up that money to plug other budgetary holes. Both houses are expected to reconvene at 11 a.m. today. Staffers at the State Public Utility Commission are claiming Pacific Gas and Electric is deliberately refusing to deliver all the records it has detailing its natural gas pipeline network. Specifically, regulators want to see everything the utility has on pipelines installed before 1970, like the one that exploded in San Bruno 6 months ago, killing 8 people. CPUC Executive Director Paul Clannon says PG&E resubmitted a lot of old paperwork.
It's not the information that we need to set safe pressures on their pipelines. And frankly, it just makes me wonder whether they've learned any of the lessons from San Bruno.
The commission meets again a week from today. Staff are recommending commissioners levy heavy fines, perhaps more than $1 million a day. A spokesman for PG&E concedes the utility is not done with its record search. Blue Shield of California says it won't hike rates to any of its 340,000 individual or family plan members for the rest of the year. The nonprofit health insurer came under heavy criticism for suggesting substantial hikes, as much as 87% higher for some members. In a written statement, Blue Shield said an independent actuarial review found the proposed rates appropriate, but, quote, "We're helping to make coverage more affordable for our members during tough economic times. It's a financial risk for us, but a risk that's worth taking." California is one of 28 states that requires hospitals publicly reveal how many people get infections while in their care. These infections can be dangerous, even deadly, and the patient advocates who pushed for these laws argued hospital administrators and state regulators weren't making infection control enough of a priority. The question now is whether this public shaming really works. The California Report's Sarah Varney has more.
What's worse, losing face or losing money? That psychological quandary could be critical to ridding the nation's hospitals of avoidable infections like MRSA and other antibiotic-resistant bugs. Under a barrage of new state laws and Medicare rules, hospitals are now forced to report infections or face financial penalties. That's left hospital administrators like Clark Todd of Pacific Hospital in Long Beach weighing the cost of fessing up with the cost of fines.
If we hide it from the public, then the tendency to keep the status quo is stronger than ever, and that's just not going to get the job done.
And there is a job to get done. As a result of infections from routine surgeries and everyday hospital care, like catheters that deliver food, water, and medicine to patients, some 100,000 people die every year in the U.S. Millions more are harmed. Leah Binder is CEO of Leapfrog, a group of large employers that pushes for public reporting.
You can't have this kind of rate of error in the airline industry, or you're shutting your doors. You're done.
My name's Dave Meyer. I live in Fair Oaks, California, and I was a general contractor before my accident.
Dave Meyer snapped his ankle during a motorcycle accident several years ago. While in the hospital, his ankle became infected with an antibiotic-resistant bacteria. He had surgery after surgery, and still it didn't heal. Finally, his doctor suggested cleaning the wound.
Imagine taking an ice cream scoop and just taking half of your foot off. That's kind of the way it looked to me, just this gaping hole.
This human suffering and the subsequent medical costs are largely avoidable, say federal health officials. Indeed, scores of hospitals across the nation have effectively eliminated infections. At Pacific Hospital in Long Beach, hand washing is so routine, the nurses complain their hands are chapped.
Hospitals are dirty. We clean very good certain areas. We wash our hands. We demand clean uniforms, but we don't clean the patients.
The hospital hired Dr. Alfonso Torres-Cook 5 years ago to bring down its infection rate. Back then, the medical staff viewed infections as largely unavoidable and treated them with antibiotics. Now, walking around the hospital, Torres-Cook greets everyone with a warm smile, including the janitor who lets us into a closet that contains one of the weapons in the hospital's anti-infection arsenal.
So this is the UV light that we purchased about maybe 4 years ago. The air comes through it. It's pass through these lamps and it's clean.
And under Torres Cook's direction, nurses here wash patients every day, and janitors are given enough time to properly clean rooms. At first, the employees were skeptical, but CEO Clark Todd says the public reporting laws and financial penalties from private insurers and Medicare have helped his cause.
I think that gives administrators like me even more reason to get involved in this matter and more clout with their medical staffs to work against some of these traditional behaviors.
Indeed, researchers have found that concern over public image is a more powerful motivator than even fear of losing market share. Still, the stigma of infections and fear of lawsuits can make hospitals reluctant to report. When the law went into effect in California, 19 hospitals out of 400 didn't send in any data. At this point, state regulators aren't imposing penalties. There are other concerns. Competitors may undercount, making more honest players look bad. And some hospitals simply do more surgeries or have sicker patients.
It is absolutely true that the measures are not perfect and don't adequately account for some of the differences among patients.
Nancy Foster is vice president of the American Hospital Association. She says there are proven techniques to prevent infections caused by tubes inserted into large veins, but urinary tract infections are not as well understood.
We know one of the best things we can do is to get the catheter out of the patient as quickly as possible, but knowing how to prevent that infection when a patient has to have a catheter for a long time is really still science in the works.
It will be some time before patients can know the full risk of entering their local hospital. Most states publish just a short list of infections. Even Medicare is starting off slow, asking hospitals to report only catheter-associated infections this year. Those that don't forfeit 2% in their reimbursements. For patients who come to the hospital hoping to get well, this double-barreled approach, public reporting and amped-up financial sanctions, may be the best cure for what has proven to be a chronic condition in hospitals. For the California Report, I'm Sarah Varney.
We've got a lot more about hospital-acquired infections and what you can do to protect yourself. Look for the link to Health Dialogues at our website, californiareport.org. That's the California Report for Thursday, March 17th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URScorp.com.